Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 413, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Alish. I'm joined today by John Dubinsky from mavengroup.net. How you doing, John?
Doing fabulous, Jeff. Thank you.
Very cool. Nice to have you take time out of your busy day and evening and come out on the show.
It's really an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to it.
Very cool. And I'm excited to hear all about your business. Why don't you go ahead and give us a little background? Tell us where you're from and basically how you got started in computer repair.
Well, born and raised in Michigan, actually not far from where you are at. Now live on the west side in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Probably got my start in computers like a lot of other guys in high school. My story is probably a little different. I was probably more of a jock back then than a computer nerd. But I was the jock that had the computer, and I did have a lot of interest in it. I remember it was a Leading Edge, I think was the brand on it. And I was the one that had the cool word processor, so I'd get the girls to come over, and we'd do our term papers and all that kind of stuff. So probably that's what was my first allure to the computer. But, yeah, from there I got the bug like everybody else and just started moving on from that. Got my first job at a local computer store in the downtown area. And just moved on from there. Graduated high school, went into the Marine Corps. I know you're an Army dog, so we kind of have a little bit of that in common. But my claim to fame about that, I was in the infantry. And I don't know if they do this in the Army, but in the Marine Corps, we had to write what's called a five-paragraph order. So every time we would do, let's just call it a mission to keep layman's terms, we'd write a five-paragraph order about where we're going, what we're doing, the logistics we have, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Well, I would always freak the people out because I would have a laptop and a Canon inkjet printer with me, even out in the field. So I would print out my five-paragraph order and hand it in because before we'd go on patrol or something like that. So I can still remember a couple times everybody handing their stuff in on scribbled paper, and then I'd had my 8.5 by 11-inch printout to the major before we left, and you know, I'd get that look like, you know, what the,
all right,
how'd you do that? So that's kind of weird, but I mean, nowadays it's pretty common to have that sort of tech in the field, so it's not that big of a deal. But back then, that was my claim to fame.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, that's yeah. We didn't have those things in the field. I had like, you know, a lot of mud and, you know.
Yeah, same thing here. Same thing here.
I think I remember seeing some, if I ever saw a laptop, it was one of those tough books. And, you know, they were just like these square, robust pieces of, you know, machinery that, you know, we didn't have access to. The officers had them or whatever. You'd see them every once in a blue moon, but it nothing I had access to, and not in my unit. So
I had my own little, I remember it was an Everex. I don't know if anybody remembers that brand, an Everex notebook computer.
No.
Canon BJ10C. I think it was.
Wow.
Maybe that was the model of the end cartridge, but that goes back. Now you're dating me.
Yeah.
Now you're making me an old man.
We are old. So that's kind of cool though. So you've been kind of interested. It is a little different. So at first you use computers to pick up chicks.
That's right.
And then you went in the military and you kind of wowed, you know, your command with, you know, all these different papers you were turning in. And no, we were just given verbal orders. We didn't really write anything down. But no, that's kind of cool. And so then obviously you came back out of the Marine Corps, and then where did you go from there?
Back here to Grand Rapids, started college, and then I started my own computer business. That would have been around 95.
Okay.
I started the business and I didn't even own a computer. I had no computer. I had a Samsung fax phone fax machine. And I basically started the business on a whim because I got a call based on a referral that somebody knew I knew about computers, and a healthcare billing company called me. I can still remember her name. Her name was Mary Ellen. Said, hey, I'm having all sorts of trouble with the computers. I can't get my printer set up, so on and so forth. Can you come out and help me? I said, sure, that's what I do. So I started my business on that day. went out there. I remember she had one of the first Epson inkjet printers, got that all installed for her, did a couple other things. And back then, I really didn't even have a business name. I started out as what's called Precision Computer is what I was calling myself.
Okay.
And, you know, I would have been a, you know, I don't know if you would have called me a pizza tech or if that would have been the term back then, but I was just looking for work. So I figured I better have a phone number and I better have a fax machine because that, you know, so I went out and I bought this Samsung fax machine. I can still remember. So that was a good time.
Wow.
And picked up more clients. It started growing. And just by chance, I picked up another client that was very big into ACT, the contact management system.
Okay. Yeah.
And he brought me on and he was all about that. So he actually paid for me to go to ACT training. So I went to ACT training, met a bunch of other people, and then hooked up with another company that was doing a Salesforce automation rollout in the company. And somehow I got tasked to be the trainer and lead installer for like 15 Salesforce offices on the East Coast. So I started traveling around, teaching people about ACT and, you know, helping install and working with corporate. I was kind of like the tech between the sales guys and the corporate office to do this ACT install.
Okay.
And then another twist from there, I was in a hotel and I met my next future boss or partner. I was bored walking around and he was giving a seminar. So I just happened to walk in and sit down to watch this seminar on manufacturing. He was up front, couldn't get his laptop to work with the projector. So I went up there and fixed it for him. Started talking to him, and the next month I started working for a consulting firm called the Blackstone Group and did some more traveling, computer work, and they were a big manufacturing consulting firm. So all was still running my own little business back here in Grand Rapids. So that kept me busy for a while, and then I would say probably about the year 2000, started the Maven Group. And that would have been based on a dinner conversation. I was with my boss with a bunch of other guys. And I said, hey, I'm tired of this. I'm going to break off, start doing some computer work, take it full time. You know, I had started doing some planning like you're doing to turn your business into a full-time business. And he said, and I said, well, what should I call it? And the guy said, why don't you call it the Mavens? And my boss says, well, why don't you say the Maven Group, since it was the Blackstone Group was his company. I said, okay, the Maven Group. And a Maven is an expert, if anybody is wondering.
Right, so right. Okay.
Is an expert in a particular field. So
that's
here
great.
I am, and that's how I got started. So since about 95, I've been beating the streets and working on computers.
So a lot of what you've done is you've been in the right places, but you've also made yourself available for all these different things. Because I think a lot of times people are asking, they say, man, how do I break into that business? How do I get into the business, you know, form of this business other than just doing residential break fix computers? And you put yourself in the right places where, you know, or just made yourself available and, you know, showed your skill for something simple like hooking somebody, making their projector work with their computer. I mean,
yeah, I think it's a genuine interest of just trying to help people. And I think that leads to something else. It's that whole pay it forward thing, which just might sound kind of weird, but you know, you just put yourself in that situation to say, hey, that's what I do. I can help with that. Usually it leads to, I can make a couple bucks from doing that. So
that's great. No, that's a great story. I really enjoyed that. Now, so you started the Maven Group about 2000.
Yes.
And then you just started working on, you know, now did you ever were you ever doing residential or was it just mostly businesses at that point or, you know, kind of how'd you work that out?
At that point, you know, as the starving tech or the starving new company, I would take anything that came my way, which I think most guys do. I think you are doing the wise thing, which you are kind of, I don't want to say you're being picky, but you've set your service area already. And I think you're choosing the clients that you want to work with and not just taking anybody that will call. You know, again, I'll go back to that first billing company and she was still with me in about 2000. And I would say to this day, she is, and she's not around. I think she has since passed, but she is still a foundation for what a lot of my company is, meaning a lot of the referrals I have to the doctors and orthodontists and dentists I work for today came from her. So eventually, over time and up until now, I have tried to cut all residential clients out of my business. The only residential clients I work for now are, I will help those that are maybe the employees that work at the companies that I'm at now, and of course, the owners and managers for the companies that I work for.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, because you talk about being pickier or setting my area. It's funny because I just had a call today. Somebody calls and says, hey, do you do virus removals on laptops? I said, yes, I do. And they said, well, how much will that be? I said, well, I charge a flat rate of $89. Okay, thank you. You know, and back in the day, you know, I probably would have said, well, you know, hey, here's all the things that I'm going to do for you and blah, 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 blah. And it's going to be this price, but you know, I might be able to give you a little deal. Now I'm like going, if you're not willing to pay that, which is still, in my opinion, a very fair price in this market today.
Absolutely.
You know what? That's not the type of customer I want. So guess what? I spent the rest of my afternoon working on either podcasts, marketing in my business, or, you know, well, I didn't play any video games today, but, you know, sometimes I'll do that too. So, you know, get a little relaxed time in there. So it doesn't bother me anymore, you know, but I used to, I remember when I first started off, man, I was like, man, I'll take everything. And then I just found out that I was working so hard and making so little, it just wasn't worth it.
Exactly. You work so hard, you make so little, and then you're frustrated, tired, worn out, and grouchy. So, yep. Yeah.
That's great.
Over the last 5 years, I've really worked and I've sort of honed my business down. I have 26, I would say, primary clients or companies that I work for that I have on what most people call a retainer. I just call it a monthly contract that they either pay me monthly or quarterly a flat fee. And that equates for me to about 500 computers and servers that I work on.
Okay. Wow.
If I digress a little bit, I use LogMeIn and I use LogMeIn Central as my remote management, monitoring, and remote access. And that's what's on all of those PCs for me to access, monitor, and control. So if you've ever looked at their pricing, you can imagine what that costs me. But it's worth every penny to save me some time.
Sure, sure.
And then my flat fee outside of that for other businesses is I charge $140 an hour.
Wow.
Hourly rate. Yep. And that includes my travel time for the first hour, you know, to get there and all that. I don't have a trip charge or anything like that that some guys do. But then I go everywhere. I'm over on your side of the state, Saginaw. I go up to Gaylord. I actually get down to Indiana, Maryville area, mostly for my contract clients. I usually don't travel that far for the hourly clients. But yes, I do charge $140 an hour because I think that weeds out some of those, hey, can you do this? Click, you know.
Right, exactly. No,
you know, and that would be one of my business tips if, you know, if we were going to talk about that. I say only work for, you know, once you get to a point, I understand not everybody is blessed or is fortunate to have been doing this as long as I have and have the scars that I have. But other than that, you know, you got to work for people you like, because when you work as many hours as I do and you book that time, you know, you don't want to be grouchy and wondering where the money is. You want to make a little bit of money and enjoy what you're doing.
Well, you know, it's funny because I remember saying, you know, I changed my pricing structure last year, probably about the middle of last year. And once I did that, it seemed like I was getting less customers and I was actually making more money. Well, that was only actually a partial truth. What I didn't realize is as I was going through earlier this month and doing my books is that I actually gained more customers and I was still making a lot more money. So I was like going, so it made it worth it. And I think a lot of people are really, they get scared when they're, you know, you might be spending things, you know, money in your business. You might be paying for a phone service. You might be paying for Google AdWords. You might be paying for tools and different things that you use in your business. And a lot of times we don't look at this business as I can take this time and it might take me 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get a good solid base set up. And we just go, it's not working, you know, month one. It's not working, month two. It's not working. And it's like, there is a grind in the beginning, but I think that you can really go out there and just try things. Do things to the best of your ability and, you know, do what you can do to, you know, to get that business out there. And yeah, what I encourage people to do a lot of times is when you're learning, grab your family and friends' computers. Work on them for free. Don't charge them nothing, you know, and that way you don't have to go, I'm going to charge a cheap price, because I'm telling everybody nowadays, and you know, a lot of people might balk at this, charge a fair rate, find out what's going on in your area, charge. And I said, don't change too much from that. Stay real close to that. A couple bucks more, a couple bucks less, whatever, but you're going to be much happier the long term in this business versus just going out there and getting all the work and getting a lot of experience, but being frustrated. And that's definitely something you don't want in this business.
Well, even on one of the prior podcasts, you talked about how you sort of turn off on Sundays a little bit, family time.
Yep.
You know, you got to recharge. And that's a huge tip too. You got to spend some time for yourself. Otherwise, literally, you know, I could do this all day, every day, 24 hours a day, really.
Yep.
You know, exactly. There's always some server that needs some maintenance. There's always something that needs done. So yeah, you got to take the time for yourself. And like you said at the beginning there, you got to spend some money to make some money. And right. I even think you got to waste a little bit of money doing some experiments to see what works.
Absolutely.
Because those are big lessons. And usually if you spend a lot of money and it's a waste, that's a lesson you'll never forget. Really. Right. So, yeah. And, you know, even if you're using the free tools that a lot of us use and all that, you know, I still don't think they should be free. And probably what I mean by that is, you know, hit that donate button once in a while. Keep those guys invested and interested in improving those products.
Right.
Too, so
exactly. Yeah. Free is not always, you know, it's great because people have a passion for this, but you know, we're using some tools right now that haven't been literally updated in, you know, years. And they still work for our purposes and that's great. But the reason they're not being updated is because I would imagine that nobody was getting any support because everybody just goes, wait, I'm going to charge a customer. I'm going to make money, but I'm going to use all free tools and not pay for anything. And it's like, that to me just doesn't set well. And it's one of the things where, you know, I definitely want to get into a point where whether it be through this podcast or whatever, where we maybe, you know, can pool some money together and, you know, start, you know, pick a company of the month or, you know, whatever, and start giving to these companies.
That's a great idea.
You know, it's something I thought about. I just have not found a great way to implement it, but I really feel you need to support those that are supporting you. Door says it all the time. That's exactly what it says. Support those who support you. And these people are out there supporting us and they're making us money. But yet a lot of times we just, and not necessarily that we don't want to, it's just something we don't really think about. You know, not that we're bad people. It's just, hey, we've got to bring it to the forefront where we say, yeah, let's, you know, give a little back. Like you said, you know, pay it forward. You know, keep paying.
And
that
it doesn't
stuff
have
out
to be a ton. I mean, but you know, a little bit here and there. I mean, if everybody did it, those guys would probably never stop developing. So
exactly.
You know, if everybody gave $2 to tweaking.com, you know, based on everybody who uses that Windows repair tool,
exactly,
you know, he'd probably be a happy man and start a full-time job just doing that. I don't know what else he does, but you know,
right,
that's the point.
Yep, exactly. No, that's a good point. So now with all the things that you do with your servers and stuff like that, and you basically, so you really kind of started off in business and you've kind of kept it that way. You've done business this whole time. And now do you have any employees or anything like that? Or is it just you?
I've gone through both. It was myself. Then I had up to 6 guys working for me. At one time, and actually did have a storefront. I owned the computer company and my wife actually owned what was called a pony mailbox, you know, like a UPS store.
Yeah. Oh, I remember those. Yeah.
So she ran that and I ran the computer store and I had 6 guys working for me. And we sort of wound down the mailbox place. So I decided one year after we only had about 5 or 6 visitors, which are business clients, a lot of walk-in traffic for home, but I only had about 5 or 6 business clients actually come to the location. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. And I had a couple of guys leave and go do some other things, mostly on good terms. But I decided I'm just going to do partnering. That's all I do now.
Okay.
So I have a carrier services partner called the Blackport Solutions here in town that does all my internet, you know, phone service, IP-based stuff. I got somebody, actually a lady who pulls all my cable, which is great.
Nice.
So, you know, that's what I do now. I try to find other business owners as dedicated as I am that I think will work as hard as I do and then give them the work and try to support them back and forth.
I think that's what, you know, a lot of the books I've been reading lately have been basically talking about, you know, find your unique niche that you can fill. And then, you know what, the things that you don't know how to do, partner with somebody else that knows how to do those things, but don't try to be the jack of all trades because I mean, it is a true statement. You are definitely a master of none at that point.
Absolutely. So. And I think we were talking about this before we started the show, you know, the one thing I'm for sure and all the time I've been doing this is I don't know everything. So That's yep, the only exactly. thing I'm absolutely sure about. So.
I can always learn something new. That's my whole philosophy. I can always learn something new. So,
and as a solo tech, you know, I have cozied up or partnered with another firm in town that does have several techs. So if I want to disappear for a little bit, or, you know, if a disaster strikes in two places, obviously I can't be there both times. You know, I have another firm I can call on to, that will send somebody out that can do, you know, place the Band-Aid on it for me, or take care of it if I happen to be on vacation with the family, that sort of thing. So I do think it's important that you find somebody you trust to be your backup, either if it's another solo tech, somebody else you can sort of partner with in town. And I do actually send them a lot of business. If it's stuff I don't want to do, I just send it over to them.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So you know, there's only so many hours in a day. And if right. you do work, you'll get other referrals and you won't be able to do it. So
exactly. Yeah. And you can pick and choose who you want to work with. And that's phenomenal. So now would you say a lot of the business that you do right now would be, do you do a lot of remote, or are you having to go on site for different types of things?
That really depends on the problem. I try to do as remote as much as I possibly can.
Okay.
But, I'm finding more and more probably over the last year or two as things become more integrated. And what I mean by that is I'm finding that, you know, I have customers where like the security system, the door locks, the phone system, you know, all these individual items now touch the network. You know, they control the door locks and program the key cards via the network. Their phone system is IP based. You know, they have a camera system. And the problem is all these are probably controlled by other third-party vendors. And a lot of the time, sometimes they'll even get installed without me knowing about it. And it's not that I want to control any of that, but the problem is I'm always the one that gets the call. And I don't know right. if I'm the one that will respond the fastest. But, you know, I remember one of my customers put this key card system in I'm referencing to, and, you know, I get the call and they're like, hey, we can't program the key cards. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? You know, what's a key card? What are you talking about? Yeah. You know, so one of my big things for 2015 is trying to get my customers to communicate better with me. And to back to your question, if I can solve those problems remotely, which I think part of that communication is so that I can get involved with that vendor to say, hey, how can I remotely access this system if it's not working, you know, either through a PC or directly, if it happens to be something that I can directly remotely access through an IP address or something, to save me that trip, because right now drive time really sucks up a lot of my day. Now it's great podcast listening time,
right?
But it's you know, most of that time I'm not getting paid to sit in the car. So
oh, exactly. Yeah. I remember messing with those key card systems probably back about 5 years ago. And they are
horrible.
No fun.
Horrible.
And they're third party companies you've never heard of before. And, you know, yeah. one goes out of business and you might only have two that are left around. And it's like, and they do things drastically different. It's never the same. It's like, oh, here's how we program the card. Oh, okay. Well, you go through the process and you mess it up and you go, all right, let me try it again. Yeah. And it's terrible.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it always seems like the software is, even though it's brand new, is so old and antiquated, or I don't know, it was not created with the user in mind.
I guess if DOS is new, I guess it's...
That's right. That's right.
Oh, man. So, okay. So, yeah. So, you do travel around to a lot of different places. Now, okay, so you said you go down to even like Indiana and stuff like that. So, how did you pick up a lot of these businesses that are so far away from where you're based?
Well, a lot of these are satellite businesses or okay. satellite locations. So like I have a tire dealer here in Grand Rapids that has 6 locations across the state. So one in Grand Rapids and then up in Gaylord over in Saginaw Bayou. I have a hair care products distributor that also does some cosmetology schools. So I do all the schools, which are here in Michigan and in Indiana.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just kind of a product of picking up a Grand Rapids company and then them having offshoots. No, I don't have anybody where I would say the primary business is out of state or that far away.
Okay.
Because I would say just to anybody, unless you really need that business or if they're willing to pay you a really nice chunk of change to drive over there all the time, or if you could do it all remotely, you know, that's all that car time is a waste of time.
Right, right. Yeah. Waste of time, tiring, you know, all that kind of. But like you said,
it puts the miles on the car. You know, I trade the truck in, and I got a little Focus now or a Ford. So yeah.
Oh, nice, very good.
But you know, you double the gas mileage. You know, it at the end of the year, you know, pays for the car easy. So
exactly, That's funny. That's what I work on.
Yeah, I think about that every time I listen. I wonder if he made my car.
Yeah, probably. I probably had some. Yeah, I probably touched something on it.
That's right.
Yeah, mostly the body sides and stuff like that.
Nice job, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I like those
my wife
cars.
Likes hers too.
Oh, good. Good. Very good. So, okay. So now, do you do anything besides a remote work out of your home? Like, I mean, do you bring, obviously you probably bring stuff back to your home, and because you went from a shop to working totally out of the home, but you're working with, you know, with businesses, which I think is great. And you have, you know, little to no residential work, which I think would make a lot of techs happy. But I mean, you probably bring things back to the shop and work on them there, right?
Absolutely. I do all my prep here. So my server prep and all that, I do, you know, I would suggest it's probably like anything else. If you go on site and you think, boy, this is going to take longer than an hour, maybe 90 minutes, I grab that machine and go.
Okay.
You know, for my clients where we have remote locations, you know, I try to be smart about having a backup system either there or maybe close, or working out some way that maybe there's a backup system at the corporate location. And if they have a truck that moves around between locations, they can take that equipment up there, you know, for me and just plug it in and I can finish the setup remotely, you know, things like that. That'd probably be on my tips list, you know, is, you know, try to standardize when you're dealing with businesses. Don't sell them junk, you know, try to put in corporate gear like the Dell Latitudes and Dell Optiplex computers, you know, don't sell a business Inspiron computers. You want to, you know, let's put some quality in there for two reasons. One, the customer will be happier in the long run, even though they might spend a couple pennies more at the beginning, but you're also going to be a lot happier in the long run. You know, you put a brand new Dell Optiplex somewhere 100 miles from you and the hard drive dies, or maybe that's a bad example because there'd be some software reinstalled, but you know, the memory goes bad or the main board goes bad, you know, Dell will send a tech out there, save you the time from driving out there. You know,
that's good. Yeah. If you're using, and I think if you standardize like that, you're going to have the same systems, and number one, it's going to be easy to replace because you already know what the parts and everything that are in those systems.
Absolutely.
And if you need to swap a system out, it's not that much of a hardship. You put a new system in and boom.
And what I do with all of those too that saves me a ton of time is like with the Optiplex systems all the way through the 700s and the 900s and, you know, now the 3000 series is I have software images. So I already have a Windows 7 Pro and Ultimate image ready that I probably change out about every month or a month and a half or two with images. So if something happens and that drive dies, I can have Windows back on that machine fully updated in like 10 minutes and ready to roll. Okay. From an image. I use a program called Terabyte Unlimited called ISO or ISO for Linux. And I can do bare metal restore, or I just keep the whole image. So, you know, and it's not very expensive. And just in the time saving, you know, even when a computer comes in, I usually wipe the Dell image and put one of my images on it. And that's another advantage to using the corporate laptop is, you know, the BIOS holds the key. So you don't, as long as you're using a Dell Restore CD or created your image with a Dell Restore CD, you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference. You know, I think as a technician, that's one of the problems I've always ran into is when a hard drive dies. Now, granted, up through Windows Vista, I had most of the OEM disks for Dell, HP, Gateway. Yeah. I don't have a lot of those, you know, moving from Windows 7 and on. So a lot of times what I've done is, a lot of times what I end up doing is I, you know, I take a regular OEM disk that I've made, you know, from a regular image. And a lot of times I would put those on the machines, but then you got to hunt and peck and try to find the drivers. You got to install your drivers instead of having everything all on one disk where you just put it on. Or if you're making your own images, you can throw your own updates in there too, correct?
You bet.
That's, you know, and that's definitely an advantage because what I've found out is that I have a very fast internet connection. Whether I download the files, the updates from Windows and put them all back in the system, or I use my,
Windows update. Yeah.
Yes. Or whether I use the hard drive connected with a USB connector, they're both about the same speed.
Right. I agree. I use the internet too, no matter what, for the updates. I can find with something else to do. I think it's less time versus me trying to keep the updates updated on the drive. So.
It is. It literally takes me, I think the last time I did it, which was last month, it took me like 72 hours.
Yeah.
To get the updates for the for the WSUS. So I, you know, I started looking at it then and I'm like going, it's really, by the time I'm plugging it in on a USB 2.0 connection, which, you know, some of your laptops are coming with the 3.0 connection now, but
The driver installed for it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. And
well,
so
my little hint there is I bought, and you can get them on Amazon, I bought some, you know, little USB wireless cards. And obviously, I know those are a dime a dozen, but there's one made by Laptone. I can get you the model for the show notes.
Okay.
But you can plug it into Vista 7 or 8, and you don't need any drivers. You don't need a driver disk or anything. It'll automatically find the drivers and just start working. So it's
I want the link to that.
It's kind of like a 30-second, you know, it's not that big a deal to put the disk in and all that. But, you know, I have two or three of those on the bench. It's just, you know, it saves me 60 seconds here, 60 seconds there.
Sure.
When you're fixing all those computers, you know, minutes add up to hours, hours add up, you know, you get the idea.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, it's just one less stress. So,
no, that's great. Because I was buying the inexpensive wireless adapters off of eBay, and there's some Chinese company, I can't remember what they're called, and they come with a little driver disk, and, you know, they work fine. You know, the driver that's on the disk is very low impact as far as installing it. But if I can save that process and just plug something in and get that connection,
amen.
I'm in.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's a great. See, these are things that I like to learn about and learn what other people are doing. Because, again, my way might be one way to do it. But I think, you know, other people have better ways of doing process than even I do. So very cool. So, okay.
Yeah, that Laptone sticks only 10, 12, 13 bucks. It's not very expensive. So probably the same thing you're buying too. And I'll get you an Amazon link for the show notes. So
great. That'd be awesome. Yeah. Anything that we talk about or any tools, if you could send me the link to that, that would be great.
My other little thing that I've been using a lot that I just started using. Have you ever heard of a little utility called Yumi? Y-U-M-I? What it does, and I don't know where I stumbled across on it, but what it does is it downloads automatically and creates a USB bootable stick of all the distros we use, like Avira Antivirus, Parted Magic, UBCD, you know, all that stuff. So basically, you just fire up this little Windows app, select the distros you want, it downloads the ISOs, and then sticks them on a bootable disk or bootable USB stick. You stick the USB stick in, boot it off the laptop, let's say, you're presented with a menu to run all these applications. Done.
Yumi?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I did use that a while back. I know Britech over in UK had just put out a video about a multi USB installer, which I just built.
Which one is that?
I will have to get the, get the show. Yeah. I'll put that in the link in the show notes. He uses a couple pieces of software. It took me literally like 5 minutes to do the install. And then I added my own personal ISOs on there. So
I do that too. Yeah.
I'm excited to see how well that's going to work. The thing I ran into, believe it or not, I had a 16 gig stick and that's the only one I had, and it wasn't big enough to put a whole bunch of ISOs on. So I had to pick and choose. I think I put a couple Windows 8.1 ISOs on there, the 64 bit and 32 bit. And no, I'm sorry. The 64 bit of the Pro and the home version. I didn't even put the 32-bit on there. And then a Windows 8 PE. And I think my Windows 7, I had a Windows 7 multi-installer that I have on a disk. And anyways, I have to go back and break it back out and put in a EI.CFG file in order to make it a home professional. It won't take the multi-installer for that particular setup. So I have to use a separate install for the different Windows 7s out there. So
how about, I don't hear anybody talk about UVK very much by Carefred, C-A-R-F-E-A-D. I use UVK all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just reading some things in a forum today about it. I've used it a couple times. I'm a big proponent. I use I'll either use a D7-2 or sometimes I'll use the Tech USB from Repair Tech. And both those tools seem to have a lot of those tools in there. I think UVK is one of them. It's just not something I run. What do you get out of it that makes it worth your while?
Well, I do most of the updates and all that through Nynite, through my LogMeIn automatically to my customers. So I don't really use it for that. Probably my favorite little feature in UVK that seems just to fix a lot of little problems is I do the maintenance window. I check two other boxes at the top, and I do the boot up speed. There's another one that says, you know, speed up the boot. And it's just a little maintenance thing. So it does the full disk cleanup from Windows, cleans up all the temps, kind of like a CCleaner would. I think it does a little better job. The other thing that it seems to fix is when I do this, is a lot of the times, if you've ever noticed, like in Windows 7, when you do some networking, especially in a smaller work group network, the shares don't always reconnect after a user reboots. And if I do the maintenance with this UVK utility, I don't know what it's doing, but it seems to solve that problem all the time for me.
Okay.
So that's just a little bit of magic that it seems to do for me. You know, and I paid, I think it's like $50 to have my logo put on it and all that kind of fun stuff. So that works out nice. I just thought I'd mention it.
No, that sounds good. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. What I've noticed is when I've been doing virus removals and stuff, if I use some sort of, I'll clean out the temp folders and all that kind of stuff using either D7.2 or whatever. And, you know, they're basically just, they're using the Windows utility to clean that stuff out. No big deal. And then I'll go back in and I'll use CCleaner, and CCleaner will still find stuff beyond that. And so I'll be interested to, I definitely will test that out, use the UVK.
It never seems like everything gets everything, or there's no one thing that does it all. There's just too many nooks and crannies to get it.
Yes.
And I'm a D7. I use D7 as well. One of my favorite things in D7 that I wish I could find a little portable app to do. So if anybody's got any of this, and when you go into D7, you can go under users and do some user management in there. And one of my favorite little things that it does is you can remove users from the login screen. So if you happen to have somebody that's got like six user accounts on a computer,
right?
Or if you're setting up like a Windows 7 machine to be a work group, just a little work group server, maybe for five or six people, you can hide all the logins from the home screen, from the login screen, using D7.
Really?
I haven't found any other little utility that does that as easy as that. Normally, I got to go in and edit the registry and do all that, but D7 is great at that.
You have to show me where that is because I'm not familiar.
I'll show you that. Yeah, okay.
Very cool.
The other little thing that I run on all my servers that I really like is a program called Hard Drive Sentinel. It kind of does the same thing that Crystal Disk Info does.
Okay.
You know, it's a smart utility. It provides even more information, which is, I must admit, probably 40% Greek to me about the smart and all the information you'd ever want to know about a hard drive. But the great thing about it is it runs as a service in the background and will even monitor the drives that are in like a Dell RAID array. So it's not using the SATA or IDE channel. It's using like an H200 card from Dell in the RAID. But really what it saves me of is it gives me an email notification if it finds anything wrong with the drive. Overheating, you know, smart errors, anything. So
nice. What
it does is save me a lot of time from maybe having to do some rebuilds, where I can sense or find out that a drive is going way bad way before it really takes a nosedive. So, and that's not very expensive either. I think it's, for the pro version, it's like $40, okay, which seems like a lot. But if you do the math versus having to do a complete reinstall or a customer being down, that to me, that's just business sense. Money well spent.
Oh, absolutely. And I think when you're in a business environment, I think you can... One of my pet peeves nowadays is basically that people are using residential software in businesses. And I'm like, that is a big no-no. We got to stop doing that. There are more robust pieces of software and things that are designed for businesses. Yes, they cost more. Welcome to the world of doing business. In businesses,
That's right. You know what?
In businesses know this. Don't let them fool you in thinking that, oh no, we just don't have enough money to afford that. It's like when you back up. You know, one of my things about backup is, you know, a company says, oh, now we don't want to do that cloud backup or whatever. And you go, really? Well, let me ask you a question. If you lost all your data today, what would that do for your business? Well, we couldn't do any business. So really what you're saying is that your data is worth nothing because you're not willing to spend a little bit of money to make sure that you have it all the time. And I think if you explain it in a not quite as sarcastic as I just put it.
Oh, I like the sarcasm, Jeff. That's all right. I like.
But in a nice way to where they understand, listen, it's very important that we have something in place so that if something does happen, you've got your data and you can go back to your business.
And it's just not that expensive anymore.
No, it really isn't.
You know, the Carbonite business plans, you know, we're a Carbonite reseller. We used to be a crash plan reseller. You know, It's just peace of mind.
Right. Exactly.
If somebody calls me and say, we need a back, I want to be able to get a back. And I don't, you know, I actually care. I want them to be in business tomorrow, no matter what happens.
Exactly. So, now, what do you use for local backups?
On most of the business plans, if you do Carbonite Business, you can do a local backup as well to an external drive as well as the cloud.
Great. Okay. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Not the small business plans, but the corporate plans, you can do that.
Okay. Okay. Great.
So,
and really, when you look at their prices, like you've said, they're not really that expensive.
Not versus the alternative.
Right.
You know what? Crash Plan, I really don't have any complaints about Crash Plan. They did a good job. I just like some of the tools, the corporate tools and the Carbonite business plans that, you know, help us back up some SQL servers and things like that a little bit easier and better instead of having to use third party tools.
I gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, I agree with you. For the amount of money that it costs, at least do something. You got to do something.
Right. So. Exactly. No, very good. So what types of things have you been working on of late that, maybe just kind of are fun stories to talk about or just head scratchers or, you know, that type
of
thing?
Well, speaking of backup, I just, not a customer of mine, but an ophthalmologist out by the lakeshore here on the west side that one of my buddies was working with. He called me and said, hey, he's more of a programmer than a computer tech, but she is kind of a personal friend of his. So he was trying to help her out. Well, she got the crypto locker.
Oh.
And everything, every computer.
Oh,
luckily there was only about 6 or 7 PCs, so we're not talking a lot. But I mean, everything was locked up. Every Word document, her whole management system for the ophthalmology practice, because the back end was just Access databases, so that was totally gone.
Yeah,
totally gone.
Oh my god.
So the great thing about this, from my point of view, is she made one big mistake. Which is they got the infection on Tuesday and it happened on one computer and they got the pop-up and she decided, or somebody in the office decided, well, I'm not going to tell anybody. I'll just run Malwarebytes, which ended up being a really old version of Malwarebytes. And it found some stuff and then they thought, okay, that's good. We're good. But obviously behind the scenes, all of a sudden the next morning, the CryptoLocker message was CryptoWall was popping up on all the computers, and then they realized they couldn't get into the management system. So their mistake was they waited.
Right.
You know, they just didn't immediately turn anything off, and it's not like they would know, so I can't blame them. The positive from my point of view is this has given me a great little story and write-up to email to all my customers to say, hey, guess what I did this weekend? You know, this is why I bug you about, hey, we need to get better antivirus, why we need to get better security, why the backups aren't so important. The great news is she had Carbonite, so we just went, it's easy to determine when that infection happened or at least when the database files got infected, so we just rolled back to the backup prior to that, and they were back in business. Now, they do have to rekey some data, but it's not like everything's gone.
Right. That's great. Yeah, that's, you know, it's unfortunate. A lot of people don't realize how light in sneaky crypto, you know, CryptoWall, you know, 2.0 and CryptoWall 3.0 actually just run in the background while they're encrypting things. You don't even realize it until it's like too late. And then you're all suddenly, you get the paywall comes up and says, hey, by the way, you want your stuff, you're going to have to pay.
And I've seen a couple of them, but this one, I should have taken a screenshot. I mean, it was well written as in, we just provided you a service. We just securely encrypted your files for you is basically the way this one was worded.
Oh.
If you would like to unencrypt them, and then they send you through the whole, go buy these Bitcoin here, send us the Bitcoin here. So
that's, you know, and that's the only way I believe that these people are taking payments now is Bitcoin. And if you got to go to a bank and, you know, do the transaction to change your money into Bitcoin, and it's a big ordeal.
One of my buddies was telling me there's actually like third-party clearinghouse. There's a whole other business started just because of CryptoLocker. You know, here, come
of
here, we'll sell you Bitcoin so that you can pay your, you know,
no
your
kidding. Okay,
ransom. So, you know, yeah.
That sucks, but it's awesome at the same time.
You got to give them credit.
Yeah.
I mean, they're savvy and the software is well written.
Right, right.
I mean, it's just another thorn in our side on our daily warrior, but as warriors, but you know, what are you going to do?
Right. Now, as far as like antivirus, what types of antivirus are you recommending nowadays?
I'm probably, you know, that's a great question. I'm sort of struggling with that. I don't have a favorite. I'm probably starting to lean more and more towards Avira, but what I'd really like to find is something that I can control from a web console. So I've been looking at ESET's online product. I've been looking at FProtect. Those are the two I've looked at right now. I have kind of looked at GFI's or the Viper antivirus. And I don't put a whole lot of stock in the reviews But, you know, I do look back at those and, you know, again, there's no one product that does it all and protects you against everything. It's just the Viper reviews haven't really caught my eye. I used to be a GFI Max about a year and a half ago. I did that before I switched over to LogMeIn.
Okay.
But I don't have a favorite. You know, I would like somebody to tell me, maybe from their experience, you know, is, hey, this stops CryptoLocker for us. You know, I've looked at and have actually purchased Nick Shaw's product at a couple locations to help protect against that when I thought it was mission critical there. But right now, it's mostly security essentials if it's 10 computers or less, Avira if it's more, with combination of Malwarebytes Pro.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and it's one of those things, it's hard to keep up with this stuff. And that's why even I've had a hard time. I've been a Carbonite reseller for a long time, and I've had a hard time actually selling that to my customers, because part of me thinks, well, if something happens, I'm still on the hook for that because I just sold it to them.
Right.
Even though I'm not, even though it's a big enough company, they can take care of everything, but that still tarnishes my reputation. And what I've tried to explain to a lot of people lately is that these backup systems are all on somebody else's backbone. Carbonite doesn't have their own server farm. You know, CrashMan doesn't have their own server. None of these companies have their own server farms. They use somebody else's servers, which is fine. They're robust, whether AWS or whatever.
Sure, sure.
But the point is, it from one product to another, we're keeping all this stuff on the same servers. So is there one that's going to be absolutely better than another? You know, I just want one that's going to be, you know, be backed up multiple times or have revisions, kind of like Carbonite, where you can roll it back. Now, let me ask you a question going back to that. Did you find it easy to get those files back? Because I've heard from other people that it wasn't easy to go back to another revision after they found out that Carbonite was backing up things and it actually had backed up their, you know, whatever the current one was.
I've never had a problem with that. I've heard that story before, but I've never had a problem going back.
Okay.
And actually, before we switched over to Carbonite from CrashPlan, which goes back probably about 6-9 months now, you know, I actually did that testing because my big fear is CryptoLocker, because that, you know, I think that's the most devastating thing out there right now, besides just pure data loss due to hardware failure.
Right.
But, you know, I've never had a problem with that. And probably the one of the main reasons that I chose Carbonite for the business was because the support, you know, the tier that we're on, I get right to a level 2 tech. And if I don't want to do it, I call them and I say, hey, you log in and you get the data back, or
okay,
you do it for me. So, you know, it's not that I don't know how to do it, but if it's like working on hard disk recovery. You know, if you can take it so far, but then again, don't be the master of nothing. Once it gets to a point, if it's mission critical, send it to somebody.
Right.
That, you know, my hard drive died, or
right,
whoever exactly your favorite disaster data recovery is, before you damage it and do something you shouldn't do.
Absolutely. So,
but no, I've never had any problems getting any data back. I chose Carbonite purely for the support level. And let's go back to CrashPlan. I've never had any problem getting any data back from CrashPlan either.
Okay,
when I need it.
Good.
So, you know, they've both been reliable.
I think a lot of them are very, very similar out there. I just think, you know, it's kind of like the antivirus. I'm going through a phase right now where I'm really trying to, same thing. I'm looking for an antivirus that I can sell to my customers. The problem I'm finding is a lot of antiviruses they're quite pricey. And so
Yeah. It's
like, you know, to buy that and then to mark it up, you're, in order to make it fair for the customer, you're really not making that much money. So part of me is like, well, do I want to be responsible for this for such little money? Or do I just go, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Customer, just here's something. You could buy this or this. Buy whatever you want. I don't really care. You know, that type of thing. So,
you know, and getting back to, you know, your liability, you know, from selling Carbonite, you know, it's funny that you say that, because about the beginning of every year, I send out this to all the business owners that I contract with. This, it's just a Google form, and it's a little yes, no questionnaire that basically says, you know, I understand that, you know, I'm maintaining and watching your backup, but do you understand that I don't have any responsibility, you know, for data loss and all that kind of stuff? And it's filled with a little bit of sarcasm and yes or no, but my point on it is that, you know, and again, trying to improve communication to say, hey, the backups don't happen automagically. You know, if
right,
you make a change and move the data, or if a third party vendor comes and installs something new, that doesn't automatically get backed up. So talk to me about it. And what I find when I send this out is I always get them back checked all yes and, you know, signed off on. But I put in there, I say, hey, let's talk. So it usually gets me in front of the owner, who's usually really busy, so that we can talk about these sort of things. And then maybe I'll work with a manager just to review everything. So it kind of gets me that once a year annual meeting to review everything, getting back in front of the important people. And I always try to get on site to all my customers as much as I can, because I think it's important. You know, what do they call it? Press the flesh,
right?
Say hi.
Sure.
You know, meet, stay in front of the staff, you know, so they actually think you're doing something besides sending them a monthly report or something like that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because it does become a point after a while, I think, where a lot of companies will think, well, why am I paying this guy?
Well,
because I haven't seen him all year.
I agree. And there's a lot that I do compliance related, security related, that happens usually when nobody else is there. If I'm doing penetration testing or PCI compliance scans or something like that, they never know that it happened.
Right.
You know, they don't know I'm updating the firmware and the printers, the routers, the wireless access points and all that kind of stuff, because the stuff just works then.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yes, you kind of got to remind them of that. And that's important.
And that's
plus, I like the people I work with. So sure, that's important too.
Yes. Yeah. Because if you didn't, you would just fire them and move on to somebody else.
Well, if you have that luxury, you're probably.
I know that's happened with some people, and it's like, or they, you know, if you ever have a problem client, you can always just raise your rates. And if they're still hanging around, then maybe it's worth the extra effort.
Well, you know, it's funny you kind of say that, talking about contracts and all that. With all of my customers, I have no contract.
Really?
No paperwork. And kind of like, what is it, Matt from Podnuts Pro?
I don't
think they do contracts either.
No.
It's a handshake deal. And when I talk to the business owners and I say, hey, if something changes and it's not working for me, I'm going to come talk to you. If something changes for you and it's not working for you, that's the way this has to work, because you have to trust me explicitly, because I'm going to tell you to buy stuff. I don't mark up the equipment. I sell them. Everything is included in my flat rate.
Okay.
You know, or anything like that, because I don't want there to be any conflict of interest. You know, you need this computer, not because I'm making money off it, because you need the computer, is my philosophy, or this new router, or the security software, or that kind of stuff. And all I ask for with a new client is, I say, you got to give me agree to a year with me, because there's a lot of work up front.
Sure.
You know, that kind of stuff. And if you don't think you can do that, or at least come to me before, you know, don't drop me after 4 months after I get everything working perfectly. Please. Right.
And those are all on handshake agreements, huh?
Handshake agreements.
Okay. I quite honestly, I would prefer to do business that way. And I'm probably, you know, I've talked to different techs, and they don't even do anything for residential. And it's funny, because, you know, people walk in my home and the first thing I have them do is fill out their information. And I, you know, hey, turn that over, read and sign the back. And it's one of those things where I just go, oh my gosh, you know, can you believe it? This guy's not responsible for anything.
I think it's more important even to have that paperwork probably with consumers than it is with businesses. And a lot depends on what you're doing.
Right.
You know, I do have like a little couple page brochure that I put out on, here's what I do, here's what I'm responsible for, you know, and then my last paragraph, here's the fine print of what I'm not responsible for.
Right.
Okay. And I just hand that out, and everybody knows that. And it's just the way I've always done it. I've never had a problem with it. I've never had a client drop me after 4 months or so that I feel used. I've had a couple clients where they've, I don't know, dropped me, or we've had a disagreement, and then the next couple months I'm back with them.
You know, okay.
It's always just kind of that ebb and flow. Like, I just picked up one. They moved to another company about 9 months ago. Now we're coming back on board with them in February. So it's just worked great. Probably most of the clients I've lost is because either they maybe retirement, or they've been bought by another company.
Okay.
But I'm on the philosophy, you know, I work for them. It's their information. So I produce a Google document. They get all the passwords and everything that I have access to. It's their stuff. You know, I manage it, but it's their domain. I manage it, but it's their site. You know, it's not my stuff.
Right. And I think that's a good philosophy to go in with, is that you're working for the customer, and you're really, what you're trying to do is in their best interest. You're trying to protect them. You're trying to make it so that their business can be up and running on a daily basis with little to no downtime. And, you know, so that's the, it's, you're right. I actually like your philosophy now that I think about it, where you just charge your flat hourly rate and you don't, you know, no markups on the rest of the stuff. That makes the math very simple.
Yeah. Cause what I do is usually what I'll do is, let's say it's a brand new client. I'll go in there. They might have a couple, let's say they have two servers or hopefully just one, or hopefully we're moving some stuff to the cloud, which is my favorite thing to do. But, you know, and maybe 15 PCs, we'll sit down and I'll ask them what their pain points are and maybe what their wish list is and where they'd like to be doing in the next, you know, 6 months or what improvements. And then I'll say, hey, okay, it's going to be this much a month. You know, where right. we're at now. And then I say, hey, if you guys shrink 5 computers, we'll adjust it.
Right.
If you guys add 5 more employees and we got to add a bunch more computers or add another server, we'll adjust it.
Well, and I think businesses from that standpoint know that when they're adding that stuff, or if they're obviously maybe not so much decreasing, but they know that there's going to be more incurred cost, you know, for those types of things.
And I think they really like the flat fee is what they, you know, they know what they're going to get every month. There's, you know, if the server goes down, I'm stuck in the server room for 10 hours rebuilding something, it's still that cost. And my selling point or my closing line usually is, hey, you're paying me not to see me.
Right.
If you don't see me, that means everything is working. And right. then on the backside of that, I pride myself on, if I get a message from somebody, I get it back to them within the hour. If it's a business client, there's just no way not to reply. And I think we talked a little bit about and new for 2015 for me, and I heard some other guys like Chris and all that talk about this, is we now have a ticket system. So I'm trying to train up the customers to put it in the ticket system. And we use one called Kayzoo, C-A-Y-Z-U, Kayzoo.com. Small little company. I think they're up in Canada. And they've been great. And they're extremely responsive. And the ticketing system is fabulous.
Now, I believe, so you, weren't you the one that sent me an email
yeah.
talking about, okay, so I did get in contact with Ben over there, just so you know, yeah. and we are going to set up a time to do a podcast. It just got late last year and with Christmas and holidays and all that kind of stuff, so, but yeah.
I'll be interested. He's a great guy, and then Sue does all their marketing.
Okay.
You know, it's not like I know them, but, you know, it's just a small company, so you're like on first name basis with right. everybody there. And it's just, you know, a pleasure to work with them. But really what I'm finding from my clients is once I get them trained to use the ticketing system instead of sending me an email, they really enjoy being able to go in there. And this is another way that you can show them what you've been doing. So, you know, when you assign them to a company, they put a ticket in, they can, you know, they can hold your feet to the fire that, hey, this ticket's been open for a week. Why haven't you done anything?
Right.
Or I can show them, hey, look how fast I'm solving all your problems. Look at everything we did this month. You know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So,
no,
it's worth every penny and it's not that expensive.
Gotcha. No, I was up until, oh, I don't know, maybe mid last year, I was doing everything on paper, pretty much paper and Excel sheets. And, you know, it was working for me, but it became very complicated. And so, you know, I'm looking at different things like, you know, I use Repair Shopper now.
Yeah, you've got me interested in looking at them again. They should be a sponsor. You guys are pimping them so much.
Yep. They're I really enjoy the things that they're doing, and it kind of for my type of business, it kind of covers what I do. So it's kind of good. Now I know there's other systems out there, and it might work better for businesses or whatever, and that's fine. But what I'm finding is it's very easy to use from my standpoint. And then there's a lot of hooks in there that you can get in other systems. Like I could have a QuickBooks account and have all my stuff go right from Repair Shopper into QuickBooks and so on and so forth. So those types of things are interesting. Now, I will tell you, I still use right now, because my customer base is still fairly small, I still use an Excel spreadsheet and do everything manually. But, you know, one of my things is this year, I usually spend a lot of money in my business. So one of the things this year I'm like going, I've got everything set up the way I want it now that I've moved into this place, you know, a few years ago. And I'm kind of just going to stay, I'm trying not to spend a whole lot of money, and I'm just going to go out and I'm just going to build the business. That's my whole goal this year. Bring in more customers, start getting some business customers, working on the marketing aspect and stuff like that. I'm not going to worry about, you know, all the different tools I need to have. And I've got enough stuff here that I can pretty much work on anything that I need.
Well, Jeff, if the computer stuff doesn't work out, you could just be an AdWords consultant from that last show that you
exactly.
did. So, a lot of small businesses would love to have somebody with your knowledge do that. So.
It's, you know what, the funny thing about those is I really don't, I personally don't like to talk about a lot of those things because they change all the time.
That's true.
And, you know, and just trying to keep up with it, you know, and people always get scared when they first start doing that stuff. But I was looking at, so I did some rough numbers last year, and I'll go into this a little bit. And I just kind of did a rough estimate. Somebody asked me, hey, count the costs on, you know, what it's costing you for customer acquisition and all that kind of stuff. And I'm looking at, okay, how many customers did I actually get from AdWords last year? And I, you know, I'm not going to give any hard numbers, but I give about 60% of my customers came from AdWords. 40% of my customers were repeat customers that I've already had over the past, you know, 3 years. And so when I was looking at it, I'm like, oh, wow, my costs are kind of going up as far as my acquisition costs. So I need to make some adjustments and see, you know, like I said, this guy called me today and said, hey, you know, he wasn't willing to pay $89 for a virus removal. Well, and if he gets one cheaper, I know what he's going to get. So, I mean, it doesn't, you know, I'm like going, yeah, that's fine. If your stuff is not that important to you, you know, hey, take it to Best Buy. I don't care.
Well, don't be mean, Jeff.
Well, you know, yeah, don't take it to Best Buy. No, that'd be a bad thing. Actually, it's funny because next week I will have somebody on the show that is going to talk about coming from that field. And he one of the things he expressed to me is that he actually really liked it. And so it'll be interesting to hear, you know, kind of his stories and kind of his standpoint on, you know, what he's doing. And now he's going out on his own and starting his own computer business. I said, you wouldn't believe how many computer repair techs have started their own businesses, that's actually where they started out. And a lot of times they don't talk about it because we belittle them so much.
And, you know, when I was looking to hire, you know, a lot of the guys that I would interview are, you know, either coming out of college with some sort of CS degree or come from Best Buy.
Right.
You know? And sometimes I think they pick up a lot of bad habits. But, you know, if you're going to go out on your own, and, you know, I can hear it in you from listening to you and from a lot of the other guys, if you want to make it in this business, you got to get up, go on it and kill it every day.
Right.
And drag it home.
Yep.
Because it's, you know, you don't have vacation if you're doing it on your own. You don't, you know. You want to do it, you got to do it. Well, so you got to have a passion for it.
You got to have a passion. And one of the things I explained is I don't care where you've learned from, because like you said earlier, we've all got things we can learn. But I just want to know, are you teachable? As long as you're teachable, I don't care what you've learned beforehand. As long as you're teachable and I can teach you my processes and ways of doing things, I don't have a problem with your background or any of that type of stuff. Because, and I've heard somebody say this before, you know, an A+ certifications, I think is a good ground place to start for a lot of people. And if you're definitely going to go into the corporate environment, you're definitely going to have those types of things. But I think even if you just get the training, even if you don't take the exam, I think the training is going to, you know, kind of give you that base to start from. And it's going to be important for, you know, you having some sort of knowledge.
You know, the important thing is to start.
Yes.
No matter where you start, just start. Just go break something and then fix it.
That's right.
So yeah. You know, and it's, you know, it's funny. Just, yeah, I learn something every time I listen to any of the shows on Podnets. You know, you guys motivated me to update my checklist. And, you know, now every time I listen, I think, well, I got to add that, or I got to remove that, or, you know, so there's never any time to stop improving. You know, and what I think is, you know, I got to reduce the time to provide better service, however right. I can do that. If I can, you know, do what I do in 1 hour that it takes me 2 hours now and the service is better, you know, that's worth a lot of money and a lot of, you know, a lot of my effort to do that.
Well, exactly. And that's where it comes, you know, that's kind of where the money thing comes in too. Because sometimes you're going to pay for tools and things to shorten the amount of time that you're working on something, but it's going to save you so much money in the end.
That's right. You want to buy those Snap-on tools? Or you want to just buy, you know, I don't know. What is a cheap tool? I don't know.
I don't know.
So,
you know,
the gold plated stuff, but yeah, the tools make a difference. So, especially if they save you time and do a better job, period. If you don't have to rework, you know that. Work on the assembly line, manufacturing, rework.
Exactly.
Do it right the first time.
Yep. Get it out there and
fast.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's good. Yeah. So, man, we've talked about a lot of stuff, you know, kind of where you came from. Kind of, we've already talked about some of your favorite tools that you're using out there, some business tips and different things. Is there anything that you want to end off with as far as the show is concerned?
No, it's been a great pleasure.
Okay.
I appreciate the opportunity to do it.
And I will tell you, I appreciate you coming on the show, and you are welcome back anytime.
Thanks.
If people want to get in touch with you, is there any way they could do that?
Mavengroup.net. I am on Google Plus, either the Maven Group. You can go to gplus.mavengroup.net. It'll take you to our company G Plus page, or just John Dubinsky on Google Plus. That's it.
All right.
I've really enjoyed it, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Great. No problem. And if you guys could do me a favor, come check out Ken Dwight, the virus doctor. He's doing a free 2-part webinar on advanced virus removal techniques for podnuts on February 4th and the 11th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. He was, I did an interview with Ken over at Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast, number 107, if you want to check that out. And I will have a sign-up link in the show notes. Definitely, if you want to step up your game in virus removal, you're definitely going to learn some things from this 2-part free webinar that Ken's putting on for us, and it will change your mindset of how you do virus removals. I know it changed mine, and I actually changed some of the processes that I do because of it, and it actually has saved me a ton of time, just the 2-part free webinar. So definitely check that out. And you guys can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And if you want to leave a voicemail, please call 1-888-697-0162. I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. And if you guys could, do us a favor, leave us a rating and review over on iTunes. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.